consider this. Is it accurate to actually describe those sounds from animals as songs? Here to answer that question is musicologist Jonathan Kramer. He teaches a class on bird songs at North Carolina State University. Hi, Jonathan.
Hello there. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So what actually constitutes a song?
Well, this is sort of a philosophical question more than a scientific one, it has to do with what we mean by the word song. Is music something that's species-specific to humans, or is music something that arises from nature? Is music based on the sound itself, or is music based on the intention of the sound producer or the intention of the listener? And that's sort of what this question hinges on. When birds are singing, are they doing the same thing that humans do when humans sing? And it's that intention behind the sound that brings up the problem. When birds are singing, are they doing what humans do when they talk, for instance? And talking and singing are different.
Yeah.
It may just be coincidental that bird song sounds like humans when they sing.
Now, I mean, Stravinsky had a lot of opinions on this. This has kind of been hotly debated in the music community. And he said that the sounds of nature are like music, but not music.
Correct. He's famous for making that differentiation. Because for Stravinsky, music is something that humans do. And when a human makes music and communicates that musical intention to another human, that's what we mean by the word music, or at least that's what he means. When Oscar Hammerstein Jr. says, all the sounds of the world are like music, they're like music. We can listen to them as if they were music. We can enjoy them as if they were music, but they're not music. On the other hand, the sounds of the world, including bird song and I suppose frog song, although I can't think of an example, can become music in certain situations by any definition, like when the Finnish composer Ratavaro took a tape recorder up to Spitsbergen and recorded Migrating Swans, and then came back and wrote to his studio and wrote a concerto for birds and orchestra. Clearly the birds are music.
Let's take a listen, actually, Jonathan, to a little bit of that. This is from the Finnish composer Eino Juhani Rotavara. Jonathan, that's not necessarily completely unique. We have Vaughan Williams wrote The Lark Ascending. You've got Respighi and the Birds. You've got Elgar, who wrote The Owls and tried to include owl calls as well. Does birdsong then become song, real live musical song, when it's used by a classical composer?
Well, yes. Again, depending on how you define music. If music has to do with how we hear these sounds, and the intention of the human to use the sounds of birds as a musical instrument, in a sense, as in the example we just heard, then surely I think that's music. There are other examples around the world, like Afghani musicians who bring birds in cages to their concerts, and they start to play their rababs, and the birds join in and sing with the rabab, and that's part of the performance. And that's clearly another example. In the case of Respighi, at the end of The Pines of Rome, the third movement, there's a little record that goes with the score. And when a symphony orchestra is going to play it, they get the record with the parts, the cello parts, the violin parts. And at the end of the third movement, you drop the needle. That was the technology in those days.
Yeah, I think it's on MP3 now.
And then you get the birds. And when I used to play with the North Carolina Symphony, we had a bass player named John Cubbage, I remember. And when we did the Pines of Rome, he could whistle it, so we didn't have to get the record.
It was
a big moment every year when the Pines of Rome were played. He got to do the whistling.
So here's the thing. To the extent that birdsong is, you can replicate it, you can notate it on a staff using musical notes. It does include patterns of sound and silence. To that extent, I feel like birds are actually singing songs. There's a difference between the song that one bird sings, the robin, as opposed to the jay.
But that's imprinted, right? I mean, they don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Whereas some birds evidently do, like the brown thrasher that we listened to earlier, who has a repertoire of 2,000 bird songs. Most birds are imprinted with one particular song that their prospective mates can hear and respond to. And in fact, that's another difference, or rather similarity between bird song and human song. A lot of the birds use their song to mark their territory and attract their mates. And certainly that's what humans use music for. But still, it can be a situation similar to the bird wing and the bat wing, that they didn't evolve along the same line, right? It's coincidental that they both serve the same function. So that's another question that the biologists and the musicians can hash out, right? Are they the same thing, or are they similar but different?
We've got about 30 seconds left, Jonathan Kremer. Yeah. Do you have a bird song that you particularly like?
I particularly like the little bird and played by the piccolo in Prokofiev's Peter and the Wolf.
What?
Et cetera, et cetera.
Whoa, that is not easy to whistle.
No, it isn't.
Jonathan Kremer is a professor of music at North Carolina State University. Jonathan, thanks so much.
It was a pleasure talking to you.